Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show. You're with your host, Karima Ali. We are airing live at Stone Mountain, Georgia. Today is May 27, 2009, and we're very blessed to be on our 800th show. And with that being said, I want to make sure that everybody understands that the coalition is now compelled to provide nothing but news and articulate that news through, I guess, my voice with the experience that I've had over the past 24 years. And one of the things that has been brought to my attention is some of the goals in which the coalition needs to target our particular jobs and careers in our industry that are not being focused on as careers for not just our youth, but for women in general. And one of those is in architecture. And it is such a travesty to understand and reading the articles in which I've been blessed to receive from a licensed architect who sits with our board of our youth build, Nadine Levy, which is a licensed architect here in Atlanta, in Decatur, Georgia, that has been practicing as a licensed architect in business for 6 years and has been an architect of a second-generation nature for over the past 20-plus years. Her sister's an architect and her brother-in-law is an architect. So it all runs in the family, but some things have been explained to us when it comes to relating to architects. So if you, I'd like for you guys to tune in to some of the things that we're going to read in a compelling article that was presented to me from her, as well as knowing that in the 21st century, we have a complete amount of people who are still backwards in terms of how they handle women of color. And I want to share with you all an incident that has taken place as we speak in the city of Riverdale. Riverdale, Georgia is located about 15 minutes outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And this city is, in all retrospect, a moderate city that is in its staggering state, as all cities are. But there has been a complete mockery of the industry and of power, in which another gentleman that's a city assistant city manager for the city of Riverdale has just blatantly placed rules based on the fact that he has a city job on projects that the coalition is doing on a social level. Let's just go over some of the things that's happening. We were called by SunTrust Bank to take a look at a project that pretty difficult in one sense of the word because of the complexity of the project. It was a residential house, but there were some things that happened within the insurance part of the recovery of the house. And so we stepped in and took on about $40,000 of work that we could offset in professional services and material and rehab in a certain type of way. And what is going on down in that particular city is that there's a gentleman named Mr. Manny, which is the assistant general manager down there, and he has completely did everything opposite of what Barack Obama has been preaching and talking about, and that's change. This gentleman single-handedly has stated that he has stopped our project because he does not like the fact that women are doing the project. That's the first thing. He doesn't feel comfortable with that, and so he is peeling apart every layer of anything that we do. If there's one small incident, he has red tagged a house that we're doing pretty much for free for a couple elderly group of women, 99-year-old woman, a 65-year-old woman. That's the mother of the 90-year-old woman, and the mother is her sister, and they're all elderly women. And they put a stop work order on this house because he feels that he should build a coalition. Check this out, you guys, on a commercial rate. He said that because we were commercial contractors, which we're not even commercial contractors in that sense of the word because this is a residential project, that he is charging us commercial rate, commercial fees. So right now we're about $5,000 in fees for a project that's less than $100,000. And that most of it is a renovation of no more than about 1,000 square feet of new renovation, not new construction, but new renovation from the damaged house, and has put a stop work order on that and has kind of redlined on his own authority the business model of the coalition. And this is why this radio show exists, because we're going to forward this show to the city manager and the city of attorney, because we feel that we're going to file charges of harassment from this gentleman. It is very, very hard to even explain that sitting at a table with a guy that does not have any experience in construction, and when you're sitting there talking with a licensed architect that has over 20-plus years in the business, he tells us how we're supposed to run our business. And so this is why this show exists. This show exists specifically for and I want folks to start telling their friends that anything that's going on around the country that's short-sighted, bring it to our attention. And then once this show is done, we will send this particular show to the powers to be and whoever the city attorney is, and we will start our process in filing charges, because right now we're $12,000 out of pocket as a result of this man not sending us the dumpsters, charging us $1,400 for three dumpsters when the going rate is only $500 a dumpster. And that's not including the $1,000 that he wants. So his rate, he denied us being able to haul off our own the furniture debris of these elderly folks. He said that we couldn't haul off any of the furniture, the beds and the clothes and things. He said all that had to go into the dumpster. So in any reflection of the word, this gentleman is not just throwing his weight around, but he thinks he is going to stop our project. But we hopefully that after this show we will be able to send this to the city manager in an email to let everybody know that the city of Riverdale practices straight-out discriminatory practice against women of color who are in the construction industry. And outdating that, he went on to go as far as accusing our Southeastern chair, Christine Hearns, and literally sabotaging her own project. And that is where the horse met the rabbit right there at the road. And so, well, with that being said, I mean, you, ladies and gentlemen, when you're looking at a 2009 with an Afro-American president, and the thing about it is the guy that's doing this is an Afro-American male. And this is why you see at the very beginning of our website, which is ncwcc.org, this is why you see at the very beginning of our website where we are our own worst enemies. People of color are our own worst enemies. Instead of this brother turning around and allowing some leeway in his thinking, he is making sure that this house does not get built. He's making sure that the stop work order stays in place. He tells us that until he finds out who is involved in the project, he's going to keep the stop work order on them. Then he bounced back into talking about the asbestos removal of the project wasn't done properly, when it has not, in fact, been done at all. But yet we asked him for a site visit, and he's a heavy guy, so I can understand why he didn't want to walk one block down the road to see it. But he is sitting back stating these allegations and does not have any merits about it. So I guess when we look at the whole thing, this goes on every day. And this is a project that we're doing, as I said before, it's $40,000 of insurance money that did not get collected, or however the case may be, that these elderly folks need to come back in and move and live comfortably. And so with that being said, this is one of the reasons why we have digressed in some ways. When you look at the leadership of these small towns, especially in Georgia, when the people of the small towns look like you, and out of that mentality and that urgency to feel that they're in direct power, that they would rather hold a project down and result to, you know, the old trickery that we've been used to from the good old boys and the powers to be that's been in charge of the industry. So this brother, Mr. Manny, is resorting to all sorts of back alley methods and actually a little bit of, I want to call it, back charging something that he could put in his pocket. I don't know the allegations of it, but this is the charge that we're going to file against him. There's no reason in the world why we should be charged three times as much for each dumpster. We've been charged, the regular rate for one dumpster is $500 from United, and we've been charged almost $1,400 every dumpster so that they can mark it up 150%. I think that's collusion of some sort, but we'll see that. We asked for the stop work order to be placed in writing. He just put a stop work order on there with no description of why or anything. He stated that this was a red flag because of an error in the paperwork that stated that one individual was the same individual that was going to do the asbestos removal. And I'm actually telling everybody this right now so that you can understand what we're up against. We're up against pettiness as women of color in contracting and construction. We're up against discriminatory practices from our own men who are involved in the industry. And then we're looking at that to transcend into this article that talks about the architectural travesty that's going on. And this article, is dated on 5/2009. This is Architectural Record. And this talks about a special report on Afro-Americans in architecture and breakthroughs and obstacles. And the article starts off by Gap the Mind. It says, for all the architectural's promise of innovation and empathy, the profession suffers a lack of diversity that nullifies those claims. The gap between the percentage of licensed Afro-American architects and the proportion of blacks in America overall population has been especially persistent. This historical underrepresentation predates the inclusion of Asian Americans and Latinos in the national discussion of ethnic diversity, yet talented individuals from these two groups have had more success in the infiltrating of the architecture overall than the regionally Afro-Americans. The election of Barack Obama to the presidency makes this a timely moment to consider architecture's diversity barrier, which appears to be more stubbornly resistant to change than even America's highest office. The comparisons are more compelling given Obama's childhood ambition. On the campaign trail in Salem, Oregon last year, he told voters that he wanted to become an architect. In the first days of his presidency, he reiterated the past aspiration to a group of seven-year-olds attending the Capitol. City Public Charter School in Washington, D.C., Obama may have felt compelled to serve the public in a broader way than architectural seemed to allow, or perhaps other interests guided his professional trajectory in different directions. In the following stories, Records contemplates the overarching obstacles that continue to impede African-American representation in architecture, with also the highlighted efforts of the strike down, in particular Philadelphia Charter High School of Architecture and Design, as well as a sister school and mentorship programs that expose younger students to the profession. As featured are design proposals of the forthcoming National Museum of Afro-American History and Cultural Buildings, which energizes a long-standing dialogue that considers whether Afro-American culture has been a part of the music and fine arts and literature. So with that being said, this article talks about that, in layman's term, the architecture world suffers in terms of Afro-Americans wholeheartedly being made up of only 3.7% of the architects in America. Totally, there's 180 women of color, black women architects in the United States. Nadine Livy is one of the 180. She makes up 2% of a licensed architect. And then there's a compelling 3% as far as males are concerned. And this article, I can say again, is something that you can look at and look at some of the bona fide architects that's been featured on here. And one of the things that they have noted that licensed Afro-American architects have risen from 1% 35 years ago to 1.7% today. Like, that's a lot. However, 7% of those are currently in practice. And with that, the statistics are compelling in terms of what we're doing to direct our young people into the field of architectural. And it's a compelling way that this article says that a number of black students at accredited schools declined in 1991 and in 2003 that actually dropped out in terms of being an architect in these schools, a school of architects. So this particular field has its practices, I guess, embedded, dated back as far as you can understand the licensing part of the architectural world. But there are architects, but they're not licensed architects. There are people who are practicing architecture, but they're not licensed. And so therefore the architectural business model amplifies something different than medicine or law. Firms often don't hire interns with the intention to employ them for long term, thus discouraging Afro-American careers in the architectural world. So pretty much it is a unless we start adhering to more architectural firms in the country that want to be business owners, then a lot of these students, a lot of these individuals are never really hired into to these firms, and the firms that are in the architectural world have been on a struggling level, and now with the downturn of work, it's almost at a different level. And what's interesting enough, especially being in the South, one thing that we have learned is that purposely the federal government has a policy with their the 8A certification. When you are in the South, if you are an architect, they have now made the architects here, because they know that most of the African-American architects reside down in the South. So what they've done is they said, now instead of just being a licensed architect to bid work, they want you to be a design-build architect. So therefore, that now cuts into the fact that now the architects have to go up another hurdle in order to get work, in order to bid work, in order to compete on projects. So now they're saying, even with the federal government, we want you to be a design-build contractor and have all this capacity, which they know that if you're a small minority-owned firm, it's hard to build the kind of capacity and qualifications. So this is the federal government itself, in itself, adherently coming up with policies to hold back the architectural world. The good thing about what I want to say is that there are, across the country, design-centered high schools are helping to increase the number of African-Americans and Latinos in the field. And one of the schools that make a lot of sense to me is the fact that in in some areas of the country, the Philadelphia, for instance, they have a charter school that shapes historically opportunities for young people to be a part of the architectural world. Now, this is going to help us increase a proportionate amount of licensed architects that really would not possibly be involved in the field, as it's been said. The school is called the Brown School, and it is located as a charter high school in Philadelphia. And this particular school has the entire curriculum is set up for the architectural world. So you have a different type of students who will be venturing their way into design. So there is a chase down of the disparity through education early on, and this is how we find that these students who make up 85% of the student body are all African-Americans are enrolled in this particular program. And the students, after they go through a three-year Presley School of Architect and Construction, New Orleans, they then are able to be qualified to go into more collegiate levels of the degree of architectural. And so this particular minority study in this program that's been put together was through a gentleman named Ryan Brown, and he is a student at the school there, and he is going to be a graduate of 2009, so I guess he just graduated. And it really makes us feel very good, because if you look at the article, these young men are standing here, as always, and they are, and this gentleman looks very, very astute, and you hear the stories in this article about young people talking about what their interest was. One young lady named Chanel Gilbert says, I thought I wanted to be an interior decorator. Here I was told I could design the entire house. So, therefore, that changes the mindset of our young people and giving them options. This other young man, he stated that if he had been anywhere else, nobody would have fought him to keep me in school. So these young people have extensive articles inside here telling their stories, and the competitiveness in this is something that historically has not been brought into fruition to our young people. And this is why our youth build is so passionately important to me. One of the things that is in this minority report, it says kids get hit hard by the very cold and competitive studio culture. This is true for all kids, but when you layer the race issue on top of that, it complicates matter. This came from an architect named Stephen Lewis in the article on page 11. So that also gives us an ideal of why we need to have a social building skills and support basis for our young people through our Build a Youth Foundation. We certainly want to make sure everybody understands that the coalition has been privileged to a lot of information and has passed on that information over a period of 800 shows. And we will be setting our goal in the next 60 days now is working on a deal to take this on a satellite internet, satellite radio, so that this can be a syndicated show. And we do have our Youth Build show that airs every Tuesday. And if you can go on our Youth Build site, youthbuildfoundation.org, and you'll see that our young people, our young individuals are taking the head by the bull by the head, and has started to bring in very compelling shows to talk about social issues and changes. And they, you know, people don't understand, but men sharpen men and kids sharpen each other. They are their best critics, and they're also their worst critics. And so when children start seeing the change within other children, that change comes, just like with the belt, the pants hanging down. That was something that took place, and then I think that's going to be something that's going to be reversed, because you don't see Barack Obama walking around with his pants hanging down. And I think these young men have a better figurehead outside of a basketball player, which is nothing wrong with being a ball player, but everybody can't play basketball. Everybody cannot be an artist. So in this field of architecture and design that has been grossly underrepresented based on the diversity aspect in the architecture world as entrepreneurs, this is why it is important that we resurrect new young enterprises as quickly as possible, so that we'll become our own bosses within these industries that we've been left out of. And so I'm also proud to announce that with us becoming members of IATSE, that puts our kids in a multimedia level of performance in the arts and theatrical stage hands that our young people did not know anything about. And when you introduce change to young folks who are looking for something different, most young people are looking for something different. It is our charge in life, ladies and gentlemen, to be that change for them, to be the vehicle. As adults, we're compelled to leave our children's children a better world. And so we wanted to make sure that this article was placed in deep thought and understanding the diversity that has not been placed in the architectural fields when it comes to Afro-Americans and Latinos in the field, and how the high schools are helping to increase this number of exposure to the students. So we have about 1 minute left in the show. I will be emailing this particular show to the governor's office as well as the attorney general's office because of the extortion of this gentleman, Mr. Manny, who's the city manager in the city of Riverdale. And I want to thank everybody and let everybody know that until the rest of the summer is over with, our shows will be 30 minutes and they will be news oriented. And I want to thank everybody. And as everybody get closer to their dreams, I want you all to understand that the National Coalition is here in becoming the change. We're changing the face of contracting. Thank you, and everybody have a good night.